Ryan Callahan back for round two, joining us here on Puck Culture. First episode of December. We have intro music now as we do this live. You like it?
I do. I heard that last time I was requesting the intro music, and now we got
I was being a bit of a diva. I was like, we don't have music yet. Can we get music? That was like the biggest complaint. Producer Bob was just like, I get it, Jackie. You want the music. You can stop asking me every 5 seconds.
We got it. We're good.
We did. You start Christmas shopping yet?
I don't do any Christmas shopping, actually. I leave that to my wife. She does it all. So.
Oh, well, what about your gift for her?
We're going to Italy in May, so we kind of
okay. So that's the big gift.
Yeah. The big gift is that. So.
Okay.
I got off easy.
I was going to ask you for advice what to get my boyfriend because I haven't got him a gift yet. I can't afford a trip to Italy, so I won't be doing that. That's my gift. He's listening. Like, damn, that would have been nice. But
She put me actually in charge of my dad and my father-in-law, and I procrastinated that enough and didn't come up with that idea. She came up with both of them.
She put it on your radar and you didn't get to it in time. So
she's a planner and gets ahead of things. So she didn't like how long I was taking. And
I
figured it out by now.
See, Evan already is like, oh, I've been making a list of things for the last couple of months. I was like, don't do that.
I don't like that.
You're setting the bar too high. I don't like it. It's too much pressure. But I'm going to get to hockey in a second. But I'm a big potato chip enthusiast. And I don't know if you saw this the other day.
I did not.
Okay, there's apparently a shortage on like the long potatoes, which are the ones that you use to make potato chips. And so like there's a little bit of a concern that we might not be able to get French fries, potato chips, all these things because of a potato shortage.
What's your go-to potato chip?
You know, everyone asks me this, like, what's your favorite? What are your rankings? And like, I don't discriminate. I like all potato chips.
But I would say you're grabbing most times.
I'm a big sour cream and onion potato chip fan.
Okay.
But those, you know, get you in trouble because they're sour cream and onions. So you can't just like be smashing those anytime because then if you're in conversation, it could be a bad situation.
That's true.
I will say I think salt and vinegar is overrated.
I like salt and vinegar with sandwiches. See,
on the side.
On the side, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if I'm having like a big sub or something, I like salt and vinegar. It just breaks up the taste. And
have you ever put plain potato chips on a sandwich?
I have not. You know who's big in doing that is JT Miller.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, he is. We always used to go to Firehouse Subs before road trips, and he always used to crush up the potato chips and put them on his subs.
Oh, he would crush them up.
Yeah.
See, I put them on hold, but that's okay.
Yeah, so.
All right. JT Miller, I liked him already because he's on my fantasy team and he's like putting up points, but now I like him even more because he puts potato chips on his sandwich. But that's not why we're here. We're here to talk hockey. So, you know, it's been a crazy week in the NHL over the last week and a half with all of the stuff coming out around coaching and sort of how there's been a huge culture shift in the NHL. And I think it's a good one. And I don't think we need to get into the sort of right and wrong of the situation. I think we both and everybody listening knows, you know, that a lot of the stuff that's been coming out is wrong. But in terms of the actual coaching, you know, we've heard a lot of stories, you know, Chelios recently on Spit and Chicklets talking about, you know, Babs not wanting to play him in his hometown. And that kind of goes back to him benching Spezza game one against the Sens this season. And those are coaching decisions and coaches have the right to make those decisions. But I think it's really brought up the conversation of how things are changing. You know, we don't parent the same as they did 30, 40, 50 years ago. And we see that in sports. But what's the line? Like, how does a coach sort of coach the team, be a nice, decent human being, but also not become a pushover and still have authority over the team?
Yeah, I think you got to, most above everything else, is treat the players with respect. I mean, if you respect the players, they'll respect you back. Obviously, there's that fine line there. You have to be an authority. You have to, at times, yell at guys, get your point across. But if you're doing it in a respectful manner, I think the players respond to that. And you have to be open to criticism yourself, and having players come to you and approach you about things is a big thing as well. And I found that, you know, playing under different coaches, that coaches get the most out of you is when they respect you and you respect them back. And everybody knows what that line is. You know, it's hard to walk sometimes, but you just don't disrespect guys and belittle guys, degrade guys. That's something that guys aren't going to respond to. And if you want to get the most out of a player, you need to get respect from them first.
You know, it's weird because these stories come out, and even when Spezza, and this is at the very start of the season, Spezza gets healthy scratched against Ottawa, the team that he obviously was a star for back in the day. And a lot of people look at that, or there's a section of hockey fans that look at that and they go, you're a millionaire. Who cares? It's not a big deal. It's just a roster decision. That's what the coach is there for. But I got to think, you know, those are the things that mean something to a player, especially when they're nearing the end of their career, like Jason Spezza is.
Yeah, and I think his situation is even more relevant because they brought him in. Right.
Yeah.
So he signs there thinking he's going to contribute, be a part of that team. And then game one against your old team, you're getting healthy scratched. I mean, that's kind of a slap in the face to him. It's not like he had a bad training camp. He had a good training camp. He felt good about the season. And you go and you get healthy scratched. It sends a message to him right away that maybe the coach doesn't like you or doesn't believe in you. But the bigger thing, I think, it sends a message to the rest of the room. For, you know, don't think for 1 second that the rest of the room isn't looking at thinking, we think he should play, because that's how guys are. You're close as a team, your closest teammates, and you're like, this guy should be in this game. We just signed him playing against his old team, which is
game one of the season. Like, if you're thinking, like, you want to win games, like, I can understand if maybe it's game, you know, 75, 80, and you're maybe fighting for a wild card spot or something like that.
It's game one, and, you know, that's how quickly you can lose a room and you know, all of a sudden, everybody's thinking, you know, what's Babcock doing? How is he healthy scratching this guy, a veteran guy who just came in to try to help us win and against his old team, and you're scratching him? You'll lose the room pretty quickly doing that.
You say lose the room, and we hear that so much in the media and as sports fans. Can you sense the day that happens when you're in the room, or is it a gradual thing? Like, what is that like as a player when you see that unfold in front of you?
I think it's a gradual thing, but, you know, I think what happens, you could start hearing conversations amongst players away from the rink, at dinners, things like that,
and they're all just starting to gravitate
towards complaints about the coach or this or that, and then you could see the product on the ice. I mean, you can see how guys kind of stop playing or almost are waiting for a change or consensus change is coming, which I think, not getting into a different subject, would happen a little bit in Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, we should talk about Jersey, right? They fired John Hines yesterday. They do it a few hours before the game. Was it at all surprising to you? I mean, we knew that the team was struggling, but for it to happen on a game day is pretty rare.
It is. That's probably the first time this might have happened before, but the first time I've realized that a coach being fired on game day. And it just shows that I think Ray Shiro felt that he needed to pull the plug at that moment. They had a tough game against Buffalo, obviously, lose that game. But before that, they had a tough game against the Rangers.
Yeah.
You know, two back-to-back games where there was no emotion on the ice, no urgency. And, you know, Shiro felt like he had to do it at that moment. It couldn't last another game. And it's an awkward situation as a player when you're showing up to the rink for a game. And
oh, my gosh, I can't even imagine.
Your coach is fired. So some of Taylor Hall's comments after the game, he's been trying to stay off social media, obviously, with everything surrounding him. So he didn't know until he showed up to the game that his coach was let go.
When a team lacks that emotion, or at least the display of emotion or that fight, how does it get to that point? Is it just the losing? Is it just wear guys down? How does that happen? Because you're professional athletes for a reason. You get to this level for a reason. It's because you care and you work hard. But we see it all the time with teams that sort of, they lose that fight back. How does that, why do you think that happens?
Yeah, I think you nailed it with your losing. I mean, that wears on you. It's heavy on you. You're losing games and all of a sudden you get down in a game 1-0. You could just feel the whole bench kind of sink in and you're like, here we go again. This is happening again. And you just lose your energy that way. And I think in Jersey's case, I know those players probably saw the writing on the wall that a coaching change might be coming. I mean, it started with assistant GM Fitzgerald coming down to the bench. That's not a good situation early on in the year. So
I think
it's been on those players' minds or radar. And it's almost like you're thinking, when's it going to happen? And that's in the back of your head also. You know, your coach might be let go. You're losing games. And that weighs on you, and it's tough to get out of that.
When those conversations start happening around the team or at dinner and you start to realize that the coach is maybe losing the room, as a captain, what do you do in that situation when those conversations start to happen? Because you're around those conversations and you're kind of in a weird situation as the captain of the team.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you got to take a temperature of the guys you're talking to, of the room, and realize you try to draw them back in, obviously, is your first goal is to try to do that. But then you could try to spin it too and say, you know what, even if we're not happy with the coach, let's play for each other. Let's play for the guys in the room. Let's not worry about the outside. You know, it's about us in here. We're the guys going on the ice. We're the ones that have to answer a lot of the questions. Let's play for each other and let's have an effort for each other. Even if it's not for the coach, let's do it for each other in the room.
Have you ever given like a inspirational, like, big speech during like a slump or anything like that? Like, have you ever done
that? There's been a lot of closed door meetings I've run and have been a part of. And I mean, I'm not a real raw guy, but you just, I think in those situations, it's honesty is the biggest thing. And, you know, you hold yourself accountable above everybody else, and just have honest conversations with each other in the room. And it evolves from there, and more guys speak. Obviously, there's not just the captain as a leader. There's a lot of guys in there that are leaders.
And it's clear that, you know, when players get scratched or coaching decisions happen or players are just even struggling, right? You look at PK Subban. He's in a slump right now. He had 1 point in November. It was an empty net goal. When those things are happening for a player, you know, it's hard to break out of those things. As somebody that, you know, has played in the league and also experienced what it's like at the tail end of your career, like a Jason Spezza or like Chelios under Babs at the end of his career, how hard is that to really kind of come to grips with when you know that it's slowly kind of ending?
Very tough. I mean, I had firsthand experience last year. I was healthy scratch for a majority of the second half of the season, and it was extremely difficult, probably the hardest part of my career other than the year I got traded in New York. But for me, what I thought about is I worried about the team and how the team was. So every time I came to the rink, I made sure when I got out of my car, I had a smile on my face.
Yeah.
And nothing changed at the rink. I did not want to be a distraction. But at the same time, when you're on the ice bag skating by yourself and everybody's getting ready for a game, it's
do you feel
it's not
like
easy.
You're not as much a part of the team when that
Absolutely.
Happens?
Absolutely. You feel like you're not a part of the team at all. I mean, it's, you know, you're out there with them, obviously, for a pregame skate, but everybody's getting ready for a game. Sometimes you're not even involved in the meetings, you know, the penalty kill meetings, things like that, that you're normally a part of. So it's hard. It's almost like you're injured. You're not a part of it day to day. And it's difficult as a player. I lived it. It's very hard. And for a guy like Spezza to come in and do that game one, you know, I could only imagine what he was thinking, what he was going through.
Yeah, so the people out there who are like, they got millions of dollars, doesn't matter. Still human, still matters.
Absolutely,
and there's still
matters. I mean,
there's still emotion involved.
You're so passionate about this game. You care so much, whether you're making millions or you're not. Your love for the game is still there. You're still human. And, it's not easy on players. It doesn't matter how much money you're making.
I assume it happens quick, too. Like, it's like one day everything, you know, you're playing the game, everything's good, you don't really notice it, and then one day you're healthy scratched. Or is it more like you kind of feel it? For you, I guess.
Yeah,
did you feel it coming?
I guess yes and no. You could see my ice time diminishing little by little, different situations, but I didn't know it was coming. I got called in, I believe it was right after Christmas break. I got called in and was told I was a 13th forward, and it hits you in the face pretty quickly.
Was that a conversation with Coop?
It was a conversation with Coop, and he was honest with me, and I respect that, and I think that's what you want from a coach is honesty. And he told me that I was a 13th forward, and right away, it's just my mindset. It switched. It said, okay, well, if that's the case, I'm going to work hard in practice. I'm going to do everything I can when I get into a game. And I played probably some of my best hockey when I did get into games, you know, for whatever reason. But
because you're probably so excited just to get back in.
Exactly. I mean, I had a chip on my shoulder. You know, I wanted to stick my middle finger up to the coaching staff, to the GM, and say,
that's fair. I think they would
this.
Respect that. Yeah.
And that's part of it, you know. And I got into the games. I had contributed. I scored some goals. And, like I said, I had a chip on my shoulder, and I went out there, and I wanted to prove to everybody that I could still play.
What did other players have to say about it? Did anybody, talk to you about it when it started happening, or was it just kind of?
No, I did. I talked to like Stammer, Hedman, Girardi, Miller, guys that I was really close to.
You and Girardi are like boys, right?
We are, yeah. So I could vent to those guys and talk to them, and I think that's the biggest thing. Is just. They understand what you're going through. You want to get it off your chest, but at the same time, not be a distraction.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being candid about that because it's been such a topic over the last couple of weeks, just in terms of healthy scratching and coaching and what's right and what's wrong. And I just think it's important for people to understand kind of the emotions that go along with a decision like being healthy scratched in your hometown or against your former team, because there's more to it than money, I think. And I think it all comes back to respect, like you said. But you want to play a little game?
Sure.
You want to play Panic or Patience?
Let's
I'm going to throw
it.
Some teams or players at you, and you're going to tell me if you're panicking yet or if you're showing patience.
Okay.
So, the Devils just fired their coach at the bottom of the division. I don't think you're showing patience with the team. But let's hone in on PK Subban. 1 point in the month of November. He's brought in there to sort of put up numbers offensively. Are you panicking with PK or showing a little patience?
I guess a little bit of both, if that's an acceptable answer.
I'll allow it.
I'm panicking a little bit. Just in his style of play right now, he's too many turnovers. He's not playing well defensively. But I think a product of that, obviously, is his surroundings and the team that he's on. You know, some of his mistakes are a little bit more glaring because defensively they haven't been playing well. Their goaltending, they haven't gotten what they needed to. P.K. Subban's a high-risk, high-reward type of player, so you know he's going to try to make those high-risk plays, and right now those high-risk plays are ending up in the back of his net, partially due to him and partially due to the team around him. So I think Jersey has to show patience. I think there's where the patience part
well
comes
played.
In. You know, they have to show patience with him, continue to put him out there and hope that he gets back to that level that everybody's used to seeing him at.
You only played for two teams in your career, Rangers, Lightning. For PK, this is his third team, so he's used to the moving, he's used to joining a new team. But what is that adjustment like when you go from, you know, somewhere like Nashville where your supporting cast is very strong, especially on the blue line, to the Devils, who are, let's be honest, they're in a rebuild. I don't care if you got Jack Hughes and PK Subban over the summer, you're still in rebuild mode. What is that adjustment like for a player? Is it hard?
It's extremely hard, and I think it's not even almost on ice, it's off ice stuff is the hardest. You're so used to one place, the how you get to the rink, the trainers, where you live, and
pre-game meal,
everything. Your whole day is you're used to one place, and all of a sudden you got to move, you got to find a new place to live. You're moving everything. There's a lot of distractions around that until you get settled. But I think in Jersey they had some expectations that were too high on them early on in the season, and that's part of it. And they started off bad. They got off to a slow start, and everything kind of fell in on them. But yeah, PK, he's adjusting there. He's adjusting to a new system, a new team, a new city, and you got to show some patience if you're New Jersey Devils.
All right, let's go to PK's former team, the Nashville Predators, a Stanley Cup contender the last few years in most people's minds. This year, you know, just battling to hold a playoff spot, are you panicking or are you showing patience with the Preds?
I think you show patience just on their track record and where they've been. Levitt, their coach, obviously has been there for a while. He's coached some really good teams. They got the personnel. I watched their game last night against the Rangers against the Lightning, and they looked really good. They did. That was a really good game. Could have went either way. Both teams kind of desperate for a win, and
both teams in similar situations, right? High expectations, but kind of struggling to find their way for whatever reason.
It was a really good game, and I think they'll find their way. So I'm going to show patience on Nashville.
Okay. How about?
I guess I got one for you. How about the Leafs? Patience or panic with them? I know that's your team.
I'm going to show patience with them. You know, I think Sheldon Keefe taking over. I don't think 5-6 games is a strong enough sample size to kind of really know what the team's going to be. But I said this last night in watching their game against the Flyers. Like, defense is important, and I think they're going to be one of those teams that scores a lot, but also allows a lot of goals. And I think that might work out for them in the regular season, but I'm curious to see what happens in the postseason in a seven-game series when you're seeing the same team every single night, and they're kind of, it's a grind, right?
It is a different
game, and I think the Caps used to be like that. The Caps used to score a ton of goals, win 6-4, taking home the President's Trophy, but then they get into the seven-game series, and it changes because the game changes.
But you got to give the Leafs credit, too. I mean, they lose to Boston Game 7.
Go down this road, Callie.
Those series could go either way, and then all of a sudden, who knows, right? So
I'm one of those believers.
I have a tough time saying the Leafs aren't, you know, all of a sudden they get to playoffs and they're not good. If they weren't good, they'd be losing in 4, losing in 5 to Boston.
True.
And those. They're going to Game 7. That's a bounce here, a bounce there. That series is
Kadri in the lineup maybe changes
different.
Everything.
Yeah, so I kind of buy
into that.
Yeah, so I'm not one of those people that was like, oh, Leafs are terrible in the playoffs. I mean, they're terrible in the playoffs. They've
not terrible, but it's different, isn't it?
It is. Oh, it's different. It's different hockey. It's a different mentality. But yeah, I mean, I don't look at those last 2 years and say, oh, they didn't get out of the first round. But
I will say this. You know, a lot of people talk about that, and I think they played the Boston Bruins, a team that has been pretty good over the last decade, and that last year was, you know, one win themselves away from winning the Stanley Cup. If you're getting eliminated by that team, then obviously they're a pretty good team. So
yeah, that goes in another discussion of playoff format.
What do you think about playoff format?
I hate it. I do. I'd love to go back.
It's hard, right? Because you get
to 1-8 seeds reseed after. Yeah, because I mean, you've seen like the Leafs, very good team the last 2 years, playing Boston first round.
Top.
Those are two top teams that are going at it that you're losing in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't agree with it. I understand the interdivision rivalries and trying to build that, but I'd love to see the 1-8 again and reseed after first round.
All right. Well, we'll see how that goes moving forward.
I don't have much say in that.
Who knows? But all right. Let's have some fun because Chrissy Teigen was having fun on Twitter the other day. I think it was 2 days ago. I think we're going to get her to a Kings game. There was some banter on Twitter, her and John Legend. Would you like to see John Legend behind the Oregon at an LA Kings game?
How awesome would that be?
It'd be pretty cool.
Perfect, yeah.
He's so talented. He'd be the perfect guy to kind of bring in as a guest organist.
That'd be cool.
But Chrissy Teigen's got, I mean, I don't really know the deal behind this, but apparently someone told her that she has to go to a hockey game for the hockey butts. Like, I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
I guess hockey players are known for their butts from just our skating, and we have larger
derriers.
Backhands. Yeah, larger
okay.
derriers.
All right.
It's true. I mean, I'll be honest with you. My wife gives it to me all the time about now that I'm done playing that I'm losing my hockey butt. So
what?
Yes, it's a true story. She tells me all the time you're losing your hockey butt. And I know it's tough take. It's tough news. It's hard to take, but it's true. I mean, now that I'm not skating, it's starting to go down.
I'll say this, like Chrissy Teigen talking about hockey is definitely good for the game. That's
yeah,
for
why
sure.
Not? Yeah, absolutely.
You played in New York. Was there ever any like celebrities around or did you kind of, I know there
yeah,
was, but did you shy away from that?
Yeah, there's tons of celebrities around, but I didn't dive into that too much. I tried to kind of stay to myself when it came to the celebrities. I know some guys that talk to them after the game, things like that, but.
Did anybody ever, like, on the team ever, like, fanboy over any celebrities or no? Was everybody cool?
Actually, Dan Girardi fanboyed over every celebrity there was.
Every single celebrity that came in? Do you remember any in particular?
I mean, it's hard to say any in particular. I know Tiesto is a huge Tiesto fan.
Okay.
So,
that's a DJ, right?
DJ Tiesto, okay. Yeah. He was good friends with Carl Hagelin, I believe. He came to one of the games, and Girardi was going nuts over it and taking pictures and everything else. So he's... Yeah, he's one of those guys.
It's nice to see that in reverse, right?
Yeah,
like,
it is.
Gives you a little,
yeah.
Like, in the arsenal for, like, your chirp game. You can make fun of him
exactly.
For fanboying.
Yeah.
I love that. What kind of music do you like?
Country. Yeah.
All country?
I'm pretty much all country, yeah.
Favorite country artist?
I like Zac Brown Band a lot, yeah.
Okay.
Seen him in concert a bunch of times. They're great performers live, and, yeah, I like it all, though.
I've heard that they're really great musicians like in concert when you see
awesome,
them live.
Yeah. Awesome. It's unbelievable. Not only just their songs, they'll start playing, you know, some covered rock songs, everything else, and just what they can do with the instruments, guitars, and it's
are they hockey fans?
Impressive.
You know?
I don't know. Not that I'm aware of. We gotta make them hockey fans.
We gotta get them on the show.
There you go.
That would be great.
I'll fly down for that interview.
How upset would you be if we got them on the show and it's like Rupper's co-hosting? You'd be like, really? Come on. All right, so we'll have to, the jury's out on if Zac Brown Band are hockey fans, but Daniel Negreanu, a famous Canadian poker player, is a hockey fan, a big-time Golden Knights fan. He switched teams, so we're going to have to get into that with him because he's from the Toronto area, used to be a Leafs fan, but I believe his number one team now is Vegas. Daniel Negreanu, long time no chat. How's it going, my friend?
It's going well here in Vegas. Things are good. Subban looks hot. We won 4 straight. Put smiles on my face.
I love that. I love right to the hockey right away. We have you up early for this recording. Are you a morning person or nah?
Morning. They're poker players. The only time poker players are up in the morning is when they're still up from the night before and the sun's coming up and they're in a game that's too good.
When you're on a good run?
Yeah, I've always been a night person, so mornings are tough for me, but, you know, I made an exception for y'all.
Oh, that's kind of you. We appreciate that. I was talking with Callie off camera just about these poker games that the players get into on the plane and, you know, on the road and all this stuff. And I said, you know, who is the best poker player you've played with? And Callie simply said, I don't think any of us were good. We were just, you know, trying to intimidate each other. What would your advice be to hockey players that are trying to learn how to play poker well?
Oh, man, there's so many, like, ways to learn how to play poker now. You know, Phil Kessel's a good friend of mine, and, you know, he fancies himself to be quite the little poker player. You know, he thinks he's really good. I don't know about that. But I think the one thing you can do is to, you know, play against competition that is of your level when you start out. Because if you sit down with a bunch of sharks in Vegas and that's your learning experience, it's going to be ugly. You know,
right.
It would be like me getting a net and just – like, oh, let me try this goalie thing. You know, trying to stop, like, you know, slap shots from the point. So best approach, just, like, start with friends and, you know, on the planes and things like that. and go from there.
Awesome. I'll stick to the plane then.
Yeah.
I'll stay away from the poker tables in Vegas.
Yeah, smart. Let's talk Golden Knights. As you just mentioned, you know, they're finding their way. Marc-Andre Fleury out. Malcolm Subban, though, seems to have found a little bit of a rhythm. What have you seen from him? Because for a long time, the kind of question with Vegas was, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury's great, but if he has to start 65 games, that's a tough spot for the team. What do you think of Malcolm Subban?
Well, so Subban, I think he gets a real bad rap. Like, he, as you mentioned, he plays so sparingly, it's hard to get in any sort of rhythm. Well, now that he's gotten four starts in a row, you start to see his confidence grow. He's extremely athletic. Like, if you look at his shootout record, he finally allowed a goal. He's 18 for 19, never lost a shootout in his life. So he's definitely athletic. You know, to see Subban get some time and actually play the back-to-back, it's really great for him. I know how much the team actually likes Subban and how bad they feel internally. By the fact that up until this four-game win streak, he hadn't had a win all season. So they really kind of, like, rallied for him, which is nice for the first time to see him get some run support, if you will. But he's as a backup goaltending, his goals above expectations right around par. So that's more than you should expect from any backup.
Yeah, I love your knowledge on the
Golden
Knights.
Daniel's legit.
This is serious. He had the shootout percentage and everything there. Yeah, I mean, I think it's nothing but good things for the Vegas Golden Knights having Subban play some games here and give Fleury a rest down the stretch too, knowing that they had the confidence in him as well. But I heard that you were a Toronto fan originally, and then you changed your alliance. If Toronto and Vegas were to play each other,
okay,
in the finals, who would be your team?
That's a great question. So the Leafs really, they started to piss me off, and it was one thing that they did that broke my back is when they traded Tuukka Rask many, many years ago.
Oh, yes.
I sort of was like, I have had it with this team. What are they doing? Since, you know, Shanahan took over, you know, you've seen a lot of growth and a lot of, you know, a lot of things to root for. But I helped bring this team to Vegas, and I was, along with Bill Foley, I was helping to sell tickets and things like that. So I've been here since the beginning. I go to all the games. I've lived in Las Vegas for 20-plus years now, so, you know, I'm much more familiar with the team as well. So I would say that, I mean, it'd be hard for me not to root for Vegas, but it would be one of those, you know, win-win, lose-lose situations. When I go to the games, I wear Vegas, you know, Golden Knights jersey, and when the Leafs come to town, I put on a Leaf hat, so I look confused.
Well, what about this? Have you ever, and would you ever, wear one of those awful split jerseys? I hate them.
Yeah, I thought about it, and then I came to the same conclusion as Jackie, and I was like, this is really stupid.
Yeah, you can't be doing that, right?
Yeah, stay away from this.
I will say something that's funny. In the first season, when the Leafs came to Vegas on New Year's Eve, Matthews had two goals. Carlson had two goals. I'm wearing the Leaf hat going, uh-oh, right? Carlson scores a hat trick, so I think that my Leaf hat is probably the only one that was thrown on the ice and is up in the practice arena, as you know, on their wall, because what they do is they take all the hats and they put them on the sort of like wall of fame for hat tricks.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's so cool.
Yeah, they usually just go in like a garbage bin and get donated, I think. But that's cool. I like that.
You got to throw a picture up of that on Instagram or something. I didn't know that. That's super cool. Daniel, I know you're super close with the team and you follow them game in, game out. Who's like the coolest guy on the Golden Knights that you've had a chance to hang out with?
So, you know, as expected, Nate Schmidt has got, like, a fun-loving, like, awesome personality.
Right.
He's really, yeah, you know, he's just really, like, a bundle of charisma. You know, the guy they call the mayor on the team, that would be Alex Tuck. You know, Alex is, he's going to be a captain. There's no question about it. You know, you watch how he sort of embraces the younger guys, like Nicholas Waugh and Nick Hague and, of course, Cody Glass. He sort of, like, is the leader of that pack, of the younger crew, and, you know, he's all about the slick suits, the Vegas life. He probably partakes more than most. you know, he definitely loves it here. You can tell.
For a fan that's never been to a game out there in Vegas, I mean, obviously I've experienced the atmosphere and it's unbelievable. But I mean, what would you tell them? What about the atmosphere there? What's going on outside the arena? Just the energy in Vegas about the Golden Knights.
You know, I think Alex Ovechkin had it right when he came to town and he said, like, this is like nightclub, like pool party. You know, right here. It's like people come to Vegas, and a lot of times, so obviously in the first, you know, season, a lot of people didn't even know what they were watching, right? But they're like, well, this is fun. A bunch of people getting together. There's music. You know, there's cool little things, you know, within the show on screen, and there's alcohol. So that's sort of what spawned the chemistry that or the sort of the atmosphere that you described, you know, in the arena. It's fun. It's like, doesn't matter if we're winning or losing, you know, the fans are engaged. And also, you know, often you'll have so many road fans coming in because it's a destination station, if you will. Like, nobody goes to Columbus and says, let's make a road trip out of it.
Right.
But with Vegas, you get a whole bunch of Leaf fans in the building when they come, Edmonton, Chicago, Detroit. It's one of those, you know, games that people look at and say, let's go to Vegas and see that game.
And you're a legit hockey fan, so I'm going to ask you, outside of Vegas right now, who are you loving watching right now in the NHL? Could be a player, could be a team, but like, what stories kind of got your attention?
Oh, absolutely, and I watch every one of their games, and I'm just shocked, and that's the New Jersey Devils. I think everybody expected a lot more from them. Taylor Hall is supposedly healthy. You pick up, Nikita Gusev from Vegas. You got Jack Hughes coming in. You know, P.K. Subban, the like, it looked like, and Wayne Simmonds. And it looks like this team, which was a playoff team just 2 years ago, will get it together. I went on a show the other day, and I said, John Hines is not going to make it very long. And he got fired like a couple hours like later, which isn't surprising. I don't know if it's his fault necessarily. You know, the players are underachieving. But it's just a train wreck to see, how poorly they've performed on the power play and the like with the weapons that they have. It's you know, I'm hopeful that they can turn it around because they're a fun team to watch, but sometimes for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Because over the summer, they just made such a splash and everybody was talking about the Devils, you know, taking a step forward, maybe not necessarily being done with their quote unquote rebuild, but being a team to watch to start the season. I know I was excited to see how those players would mesh together. But Callie, you could probably talk to the fact that, you know, the team on paper is one thing, but figuring out how to play together, I guess, clearly is a whole other ballgame.
Yeah, and I think the big thing with them, and I said at the beginning of the season, I thought their expectations were a little bit too high. Obviously, they got some guys that come in and help them, but I thought their goaltending was a question. Their D-core was a big question. P.K. Subban, adding him, he had some offense, which he struggled to do, but yeah. On the defensive side of the puck, he struggles sometimes. So, yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised by how they've done because it's been so bad, but I didn't expect them to do as well as a lot of people thought.
Yeah, expectations might have been, like, too high.
Yes.
Originally.
That's what I believe. But
I don't think anyone expected this.
I agree with you, though. It's been interesting to watch that and interesting what's going on there.
Daniel, if you had to predict right now who would play in the Stanley Cup final, what would your odds be? Who would you put your money on?
Well, my God, you can't really ignore what Boston's doing right now. You
know, I know, right?
Right now, but like, man, every night they just come and they just win. And they win convincingly. So that team is for real. Obviously, Tampa Bay is coming on, you know, in the East, and I think that they'll be a factor by the end. But, and Boston, you know, it's amazing to see both Boston and St. Louis with the records they have. You got to imagine there's something to the Stanley Cup playoff hangover for both teams, but both have really, like, been able to put up the points. So I'm going to go with Boston in the East. And in the West, I got to say, I really believe that, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights are the deepest, best team, certainly in the Pacific Division, which gives them a better path to get to the finals, and I do believe that they've got what it takes. And you know, you look at Kelly McCrimmon, he's tinkering with the lineup. They just picked up Chandler Stephenson for a fifth-round pick to add some more depth, and he performed really well in just his first game. So, you know, I think, like, with the third line looking like Glass, Tuck, and whether Eakin or Carrier, that's a pretty solid third line that not a lot of teams can boast right now. So I'm going to go with a Vegas. Let's go Vegas, Boston. Why not?
I was wondering where you're going to do if you're going to do your loyalty there. I like it. I like your loyalty. I agree.
Well, you know, it's less about loyalty than honestly. That's my honest opinion based on, like, seeing what's here on this team. I really think that they, you know, like, well, who else would there be? With, like, Winnipeg, Nashville, they've looked like they've faltered. St. Louis, I don't know that they can keep this up. Like, statistically, they've been overachieving so far this season. So, you know, Vegas seems like the spot.
I think
the Pacific, too, certainly. It's very much up for grabs. Like, yeah. I look at that division, and I'm like, I don't know, like, how many teams are going to come out of this division.
That was a good point you made with their division and their path being maybe a little bit easier than somebody else's.
Well, but I mean, they're going to expect McDavid and Draisaitl to play, what, like 40 minutes a game?
Yeah. Might be 60. Might be 60.
Every other night. I mean, doing that every other night in the playoffs when you're getting smashed by Reeves and Carrier, I don't know. I don't know if the body holds up through that.
Yeah, and Vegas has the experience, too, the postseason experience over the Edmonton Oilers, yeah. That's for sure as well.
So did you play hockey growing up? Did you were you a skater, goalie? What was your deal with playing?
Well, every day after school, in front of our house, we played road hockey. So I was not much of a skater. My parents are European. You know, they didn't understand sports and all that stuff in the same way like hockey. So every day, a group of us, till dark, we would play road hockey with a tennis ball. And I had a curved stick that was way illegal. The thing was like, you could pick the puck up on it and just throw it like a lacrosse stick. But we had a lot of fun with that. But I never really was much of a skater, so I didn't play ice hockey.
You know, Daniel, one of the things I love about you, you're such an ambassador of hockey. You're always tweeting about it. You're always talking about it. As you mentioned earlier, you were one of the first people sort of promoting getting a hockey team to Vegas. You're a happily married man now. Does your wife like hockey? Have you converted her into a hockey fan, or was she before?
Well, she liked hockey a little bit. You know, she's not big a like watcher on TV, but going to the games, she absolutely loves. We got her a Grim Reaver jersey because she's a big Ryan Reeves fan.
Okay.
She just loves when he smashes people. Smash them, you know, that's a lot of fun for her. And you know, obviously the fisticuffs and fights, she's into that. Little bit. She got like an old school hockey viewer mentality in that regard. But no, she's definitely grown to love it, especially the playoffs. She really gears up for the playoffs.
All right, give us an update on your fantasy team. You've told me about this fantasy league that you're in before. It's been around. We've been doing it a long time, right? Keeper League?
I've been in the same league since 1996.
That is crazy.
And it's awesome. It's similar to like owning a team where you have a 20-man farm roster of like young kids, and then you've got a 23-man roster with 20 teams. So we're picking about 500-600 players total. My team is very, very young. You know, Sebastian Aho, Rupe Hintz, Vincent Trocheck's my elder statesman. And I do have Jack Hughes and Nico Hischier. So as I said, I'm in a rebuild. And this is year three of my rebuild, and it's coming along.
I was going to say, Hischier and Hughes, no wonder you're watching so many Devils games.
Yeah, and I also have Jesper Boqvist somehow, which is crazy, who's playing on the wing there. So, yeah, that's literally the reason to watch a lot of Devils games. Because I want to see how my fantasy, my keeper league, you know, boys are progressing.
What's your team name? Is it safe for the podcast?
Yeah, it's safe. we call ourselves the Cheap Thieves, which has a lot of entendres and meanings within it. I had a partner, with the team, and we sort of created that name years ago, and it stuck.
That's awesome. That's
it's a crazy league, yeah. Right? Do people get eliminated if they finish in last place or anything like that, or is it always everyone's welcome back the next year?
Oh, we've had almost all the same 20 owners, but within the league, we've created leagues within the league, okay? So on Tuesdays, for example, we have a survivor night. So every Tuesday, you know, the lowest scoring team that didn't have immunity from the week before is out until there's one left every week.
We also
have a Champions League where we put the teams together based on their, like, you know, performances in past seasons. Then we've added another Survivor League on Saturdays where we actually play Survivor, where, you know, we have tribes, four tribes of five.
Holy
the lowest
cow.
Scoring tribe, or no, the highest scoring tribe gets immunity. The others vote out who they want to get rid of. At 10, you merge into two tribes. I'm sorry, at 15, you merge into two tribes. At 10, it's individual immunity. We essentially copied the rules of actually the show Survivor, and it's been a lot of fun and causes a lot of, like, animosity within the group, which is great.
Wow. How do you keep track of all that?
I'm a stats
actually, wait. Yeah, you're one of the best poker players in the world. Never mind. I know how you keep track of it.
I need a handbook to keep track of that thing.
Oh, it's a blast. Actually, yeah, the votes are in for this week's vote. We have a deadline Wednesday by noon. So, and I'm the commissioner of the league, of course. So I have to announce it, and I do so as dramatically as possible.
Oh, my gosh.
That's awesome.
That sounds like a great time, but no surprise when it comes to you. You're always so much fun. One more quick one before we go. That's a pop culture question, because I know you're a layered individual, and you follow pop culture as well. Have you seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood yet?
I saw your tweet.
Yes.
I did see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yes, I did see it.
Thoughts?
I thought the ending was awesome.
I'm with you. The last 10 minutes where, everything hits the fan, I'm with you. That was incredible. But the lead up, I was bored.
I wasn't. I like quirky, kind of weird movies like that. And I was happy that the ending, they went, you know, the angle that they took. But no,
all right, thanks for your time.
No,
I'm just joking.
I mean, it was definitely weird. I could see how people, you know, love it or hate it. But I like when artistic movies go for it and try something different.
All right, fair enough. Thanks for joining us, Daniel. Sorry for waking you up early. I assume you're going back to bed now, so enjoy the nap.
Well, you know what? Now that I'm up, I might, you know, do some hockey studying.
There you go.
Yeah, you got to study for that fantasy league. Wow.
Yeah.
See ya.
All right, guys. See ya.
Daniel Negreanu, one of the biggest Vegas Golden Knights supporters. Actually, even before they officially had a team, I remember he was very vocal about his support of Vegas getting a team on Twitter back in the day. But when Vegas entered the league, there was a lot of talk about how are coaches going to control their players when they're going out to Vegas, the visiting teams, because, you know, there's a lot of distractions in Vegas.
Just a couple.
Was there ever, like, before you go out to Vegas, a chat just about curfew, anything like that?
Yeah, actually, when I was with Tampa, we got really lucky. We had like 4 days in Vegas, our first time we went out there.
Is that a blessing or a curse?
We thought it was a blessing, and then maybe the end of the 4 days was a bit of a curse. But we actually ended up losing the game with like 2 seconds left, but played really well. But yeah, we had a rookie party out there. It was fun. There's definitely a lot of distractions, though. I'll tell you that.
How was the rookie party? What'd you guys do?
It was fun. We went to dinner, and then we went to had a little bit of a concert. We went and saw, I can't think of the name of the band we saw, but it was at one of the clubs.
Clearly wasn't a country artist.
It was not. But it was fun. Yeah, we had a great time. It was good bonding as a team, and it was a good trip. We loved it there, obviously.
Was anybody feeling the effects of Vegas in that game?
We had a couple of guys come down with the flu.
Okay, all right.
I'm not sure.
This might have been from the flight. I don't know.
Think it was. I hear bad chicken.
Bad food. It's always bad food. That's like the go-to, right? Yeah, like if you're going to be calling in sick for work or like you need to get out of something, food poisoning's a good one.
I know. I actually hurt my shoulder the game before, so I wasn't playing.
Hurt your shoulder.
I did. So it's, I got lucky. I didn't have to come down with the flu. I had an injury.
To be honest with the listeners, like you and I are getting to know each other really as we do these podcasts
and as we
do these shows, which is, you know, it's one thing to, you know, kind of like feel your way through television and get used to being in front of camera and lights and talking about hockey, which is something you do very easily because you've been around it your whole life. But we're actually getting to know each other as we do live shows, which is kind of weird. So I was talking off camera or off record, I don't know what you would call it on a podcast, about, you know, my recent movie takes. And I posted on Twitter about this yesterday, how I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is completely overrated. I don't think it's a terrible movie. I just don't think, like, I'm not going to write home about it, you know? The ending's good, but the buildup, kind of boring. And you kind of were like, I'm not really a movie guy. That's not really your thing. So what does Ryan Callahan like to watch?
I like reality TV is my...
Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
I have seen a couple of those episodes, but no more...
Anyone who says they haven't, by the way, is lying. Like, everyone has seen at least one episode.
Yeah, you got to tune in for the drama. But I'm a big brother guy. I love Big Brother, yeah.
Rupert's a huge Big Brother guy. He almost went, like, he was talking to the casting agents about going on, but then realized, I'm not going to be able to get out of training camp. What if I do really well and I'm in the running to win it? But do you think you would do well on it?
I think I could do good at it, yeah. I mean, I think I'm a good read of personalities and...
Oh, okay. Yeah, so what would your strategy be if you went on Big Brother? Have you ever thought about that?
Oh, yeah, of course I have.
So what's Callie's strategy?
Doesn't everybody? I try to lay low early on.
Naturally.
Try to not put myself on the radar.
So you're not winning HOH week one?
No, of course not.
But you're going to do okay.
You're going to do okay. You can't completely show everybody that you're throwing the challenge, but... try to lay low, try to make some good friendships on both sides of the house. And then I think after a couple of weeks, you got to pick a side and roll with it and try to be loyal to the ones that you're loyal to.
I think the key is knowing when to make that bold move. You hear everyone talk about it all the time. I mean, the twists are a whole other thing because you don't know when they're coming. But knowing when is the right time to turn on somebody.
Yes.
Like that, I'm fascinated by the players who have played that game and their ability to realize like when the right time is, and the players who fail are the ones who think about making that bold move and then they don't and it bites them.
But it's so much easier too watching it, right? I'm yelling at the TV like, you got to
evict. Oh yeah, because
you know everything, right? You're like, I would evict him right away. But I can imagine being on there. You have no idea what everybody else is saying or thinking in the diary room, all the extra stuff.
Oh my God, you're such a fan, diary room. I love it.
I love it.
Favorite player real quick, ever?
Probably Evil Dick. I loved. Just entertaining.
Entertaining, but also so mean to everyone and somehow still won, which is just
the entertainment factor I love.
Pretty crazy. Speaking of entertainment, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl have been the most entertaining duo, I don't even, in a long time, to play on the same team. Certainly for the Edmonton Oilers. And in your mind, do you think Draisaitl could be in the Hart conversation as well if these two keep it up? Connor McDavid always is, but...
He has to be, no? I mean, he's right there. Same numbers are pretty much the same. I know everybody's saying that if he's with McDavid, so he's putting up these numbers because of McDavid, but... You brought it up earlier. Other players have played with McDavid and don't put up the same numbers.
Well, that's my whole thing. I'm like, how can you just write off Leon Draisaitl, who's on pace for like a million points, just because he plays with McDavid? Of course, it's a mutually beneficial relationship or partnership, but I think Draisaitl deserves a little more credit.
I agree with you. He's not getting as much love as he deserves.
What about Zach Cassian? He played on that line for a little while before he got hurt, and he seemed to really fit in. Is it almost difficult to kind of fit in on a line like that when you've got guys like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl who are so talented and such offensive superstars, powerhouses? What about that third guy? How important is it for that guy to understand his role? I don't think you can just put anybody there, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you can either, and I think Cassian's been a good fit there for that exact reason. He knows his role. He knows what he does on that line. He knows what he's about. He knows his attributes, which are going to get the puck for those guys, going in deep, in front of the net. And he brings a physical element to that line. And when you're playing with two superstars
Don't mess with
like
Connor
that,
McDavid. Exactly, Cassian's there.
Because you know he's going to be there. And he's no slouch himself. He can play the game, and he knows the puck's going to go to the front of the net. So him being there, he knows where that puck's going to go.
Best player you ever played on a line with?
I'd probably... In Tampa, it would definitely be Steven Stamkos. My first year there, I played with him. He was unbelievable to play with. His talent, his shot, saw the ice well, his speed. And then in New York, probably would be Brad Richards. I had a career year playing with Brad his first year in New York. And just the way he saw the ice, and I had my most career goals playing with Brad. And he could dish the puck from anywhere, backhand, forehand. He was so good at it. Saw the ice well, so it'd probably be those two guys.
What was being on the bench with Brad Richards like? Was he a talkative guy? Like, what kind of conversations would you have with Brad Richards on the bench?
Yeah, he actually didn't talk a ton. It's probably going to kill me, but he moped a lot. He's a little bit of a moper, and he'd get down on himself. But,
That's so hard on himself, which is why you become great,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, but no, he was a great teammate. He was my first year as captain, he was there, and I leaned on him a lot, and he helped me out through my first year of captaincy.
When he moped, did you give the inspirational, like, nah, man, you're great?
No, I'd usually just mess with him a little bit and try to get a smile out of him.
You might not give me a truthful answer to this, but how often on the bench do conversations veer away from hockey? Does that ever happen?
Oh, it happens all the time. I mean, it happens a ton.
And you guys are talking about Big Brother on the bench.
You know who actually was the king of it is JT Miller. Me and him used to get on the bench and start talking about the most random stuff. And
How does that happen? Just from the Jumbotron?
Jumbotron, things going on, things that are happening in the stands. I mean, fans might think, well, we're not focused, but you're focused, but you're aware of what's going on in your surroundings. And
I think sometimes, too, I obviously never played in the NHL, but it's an 82-game season. It's a grind. It's a long season. I feel like you need that break. Like, if you're just completely focused on hockey 24/7, all day, every day, I think you're going to wear yourself out. So it must be nice sometimes to get it, like, a guy makes a joke to you on the bench about whatever it is. Maybe it's something on the Jumbotron. Maybe it's something that happened the day before. But is there something to that lightness?
I think it varies to each player. There's some players that can talk on the bench about random stuff and continue to stay be in the game. And there's some players that have to be so locked into the game and, block out their surroundings. And it's
different for everyone, I guess.
It's different for everybody. I had no issues with... kind of stop thinking about the game for a second and having a conversation with somebody on the bench. I had no issue with that.
Any random JT Miller conversations that you remember? that are good
that
for
are
a podcast?
Lot, yeah. Once we were in, still makes me laugh. We were in Florida, going into the third period in Florida. We had a big lead, so that was probably led to it a little bit. But
right.
We stood on the bench for the third. Me and him are sitting at the end of the bench, and he looks back at our trainer, Tom Mulligan, our trainer, and he says, is there going to be pizza after the game? That's what he started my question on. And I don't know why it struck me so funny. I'm laughing fully
on the
bench.
Middle of the game, he's thinking about food.
And he's worried about if we're going to have pizza after the game. But I had a lot of fun with Millsy on the bench.
I don't know if you saw this kid that did the moonwalk in San Jose.
I didn't see that.
So they had one of those intermission, breakaway shootout competitions. And this kid, I don't know how old he is, but he looked like, I don't know, maybe 11, 12. Mm-hmm. So he goes down, does a spinorama, I believe, before scoring,
yeah.
and then moonwalks, like puts his head down and moonwalks as a celebration. So a couple days later, San Jose decides we're going to bring this kid, his name's Sam, out to practice.
Nice.
And he's out there showing, I think it was Kevin LeBanc and Timo Meyer, how to do it.
How to moonwalk.
And it's like, I just think like, having fun and allowing that kind of stuff, I think it's important. I think it kind of like loosens everybody up a little bit.
It's good. It's good to see the players' personalities and, like you said, loosens everybody up. And every player's different. You know, everybody.
If someone did a celly like that in a game, like an NHL player did a celebration, are you for or against the over-the-top celebrations?
I'm against it.
Let's talk about it.
I'm a little bit old school in that sense, right? I don't like it. I don't like the over-the-top celebrations. I mean, I don't mind cheering hard, or I was big for, you know, giving a big celebration, but like a moonwalk or something like that.
Something that's like showboating?
Showboating, yeah. You know, that's not something I
agree
with.
Let the kids do that in the intermission.
I remember, I mean, talk about how kind of the game has changed. You know, I was in New York and Artem Anisimov.
Oh my gosh, Rupper talked about this last week.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, he did, yeah.
You know, he scored the goal and he
shot the goalie
and a big brawl broke out. And you know, I wonder in today's game if someone did that, if there would be that.
Oh, it wouldn't be good.
If that same reaction.
You know, it's funny, actually, because we had Timo Solani on the show like a few weeks ago, and it's so old, but I asked him about the celebration where he tosses the glove up and he shoots it. And first of all, he's the best. He is like the nicest person ever, always like energetic and happy. But he actually said, he laughed. He goes, you know, I'm actually still kind of embarrassed that I did that.
Yeah.
He's like, I didn't plan it. It just sort of happened. I was so happy. I was so excited. I just did it. But he even then, and this was maybe a month ago, he was like, I'm a little embarrassed about that, actually. And I was like, what? It's like iconic. People love it. So even someone that's, you know, done it.
Yeah, I think there's a line there that shouldn't be crossed. You don't want to showboat or show somebody up or do something like that.
And so what did you say to Anisimov after he did that? Did you say anything
to
him?
I did. I grabbed him and I brought him in the other room and had a quick chat with him, just saying, you know, you can't do that. And to his credit, he apologized. It's actually on 24/7.
Yeah, it's on the dock, right.
He apologized to the team right afterwards. And to his credit, he had no idea. He's, you know, he's a little bit of broken English. He's saying it to me. He's like, well, the guy in Russia that I really like.
The culture's different over there, right?
The guy in Russia that I really like does those celebrations all the time. And even on the ice, he's like, why is everybody coming after me? Like, I almost felt bad for him because he had no idea why people were coming after him. And you know, I just talked to him, and you know, you can't do that. And he was apologetic. And obviously, to his credit, he had no idea what he was doing. He had no idea that.
Yeah, Rupper said the same thing. He was like, where I come from, like, you're happy? That's what you do.
You
celebrate.
Yeah, that's what he's saying, and it's broken English. And
Rupper's like, you could have pointed your stick anywhere else, not at the goalie.
But I felt bad for him.
I don't know if you saw the Sabres put out this paddle battle that they had. It was a ping pong tournament, bunch of guys involved. Some were great at it, some were not so great at it. But it kind of, you know, opened the door a little bit to fans for how teams kind of spend their time, right? Like, I'm sure the Sabres are not the first team to have a ping pong tournament. This one just happened to be film. What do you remember anything from your playing days that sticks out as kind of like a fun competition? Maybe it's poker on the plane or ping pong or, I mean, who knows what?
It's funny you bring it up because we played a lot of poker on the plane in New York. There's like eight of us that would sit all together and play poker. We had the chips and everything like that, which was a lot of fun. But ping pong too was huge in New York my first couple years there. And guys would always play. There was a ping pong table in the lounge. And a funny story, I mean, me and Scott Gomez one time decided to play for a little bit of money.
How much money?
Yeah, a little bit of money.
I'd keep pushing you, but we don't know each other that well.
I know, so I was obviously on my entry-level deal, and Gomer's coming in and just signed a big contract. So it was enough money for me to be a little bit nervous, but to Gomer, I don't think it was a big deal to him. So
we
play. It was a good game. He ends up beating me, and you know, so I get my cash and I give him the money. And thinking to myself, I'm like, he's not going to take this from me, like, right? Like, this isn't going to happen, right? So in Gomer,
he's going to be like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. So in Gomer fashion, he rips it out of my hands and he's like, give me my money. He goes, I told you I was going to beat you. He puts it in his pocket. So I'm like, oh man.
Did he gloat a little bit?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
So he's strutting around the room, and all the guys know that this is going on. So I forget who it was, one of the older, it might have been Steven Valquette.
Okay.
So he goes to Gomer, and everybody's getting dressed in the room. He's like, hey, Gomer, like, I think that money to your money was a little bit different. Callie seemed a little bit nervous in that ping pong game. He's like, why don't you play him, you know, the ratio with the contracts
and the money. So basically
the percentage
of what you were making, you adjusted to the percentage of what he makes.
Exactly.
I got you. So bigger sum.
Bigger, right away, he's like, absolutely not. There's no way I'm playing for that money. And then ends up being the whole team starts to get on him. Come on, Gomer, give the kid a chance, get his money back. Let's make it so you're both nervous. So, and Gomer, the way he is, he says, I'll beat him again. Absolutely, let's do it again. So.
Yeah.
This is before practice, so after practice, the match is all set up. This is going to happen.
And everybody knows about
everybody
it.
Everybody knows about everything. So
oh, my gosh.
All practice guys are coming up to me, talking to me, you got to beat him, you got to beat him. And so after practice in the lounge, we have the ping pong table set up in the middle, and guys bring couches around to sit around the ping pong table. So it's almost like stadium seating.
Sounds like a scene out of a Will Ferrell movie.
Watching me and Gomer play ping pong against each other. And Steven Valquette, again, who was good buddies with Gomer, played him all the time. He gave me a little bit of a hint on,
oh, what was that?
On how to beat him. And when he served it, his serve was weird, but he said attack the net when he serves it. So I tried it. It started working, and I started beating him. Anytime I got a point, the whole room just erupted, right?
Yeah.
So it came down to the last couple points, and I end up winning and beating him. And the whole place is going crazy. Guys are yelling at
like
Gomer.
Was it like, certain guys cheering for Gomer, certain guys cheering for you?
Nobody was cheering for Gomer. So anytime.
So your rookie season, you said?
It's like my second year.
Oh,
probably.
Second year,
yeah,
okay.
So everybody jumps on me. I win. Gomer's all mad. And then the next day, he brings in the cash, and I...
So he gloated fashion, when he won, and then was a bit of a sore loser when he lost
fashion,
a little bit?
I ripped the cash out of his hand. I said, give me that. You
like,
know?
How's it feel?
How's it feel, yeah. So... That's my.
Did you go buy
story.
Yourself a treat with his money?
I did. Yeah, we.
Dinner? What'd you do?
I don't want to give away how much it was, but me and my wife took a little trip on it.
Oh, was it? Oh my! I wish we had your wife to just like bring her on the show right now. I'd be like, so the trip. Where'd you guys go? You don't want to tell me right now because you don't want me to be able to put a price on
exactly,
it. How long was the trip?
It was good. It was good.
It was like
it was a
week.
Very nice trip. We enjoyed ourselves.
Like very with a capital V. I love that story. That's so good. Listen, thanks again for the time. We got a show coming up in a few hours, so we'll go prep for that and be on our way.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for listening to Puck Culture. You can find it everywhere podcasts are found. It is part of a family of podcasts at the league. I always promote the fantasy one because it's my favorite one. Fantasy on Ice podcast, Pete Jensen, Rob Reese. You can catch that everywhere that podcasts are found as well. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.